Ariel, hi, welcome.
Hello, Kenneth.
I'm very excited about your what you're doing in the leadership world, and your conscious technology for impeccable leadership is just a huge mouthful there, and it gets me very excited. I know, you know, we're both passionate about leadership, and I'm curious what has inspired and motivated you to be so keenly, you know, on leadership.
You know, it's an interesting thing when people talk about leadership, Kenneth, because there's this argument about whether leaders are born or they're groomed. And I would say, being a natural leader, I consider myself a natural leader, that I was truly born with the proclivity to be a leader. And then I, as we've spoken of a little bit in our previous conversations, Kenneth, I've had an incredible opportunity in my life to both see, to be inspired by possibilities of new initiatives, and to be really fearless and to know, well, if I dream up the idea, of course I can bring it to fruition. So I've developed this capacity through my life, through several decades now, to really trust myself whenever I get an idea of something that's not been created before, and really launch into ascertain, well, how do I bring it to fruition? Who do I bring on board? Who do I invite to participate, et cetera? And then it's like planting a garden, you know, to see which seeds sprout. So, you know, as we were preparing for this conversation, for this interview today, I was thinking, what's some of the first examples I could share to people who are listening about me as a leader? Because I think it's always valuable when we give stories. You know, it really roots it in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first leadership experiences, if I look back, were when I was in junior high school, so when I was a young teenager. And one of the – and my life story is I don't take the same size steps for very long. I tend to – leapfrog into larger and larger initiatives. You know, I learn fast. So I'm going to share with you probably the third major leadership example that I initiated in my life. And it was when I was in high school. And the city that I grew up near, Kenneth, had a huge festival every summer. It had many festivals, but one was called Folklorama. And so around the city for a couple of weeks, different cultural groups would have pavilions at which they would demonstrate their cultural clothing, their cultural music, their food, their festivities, and people would buy a passport, just like, you know, traveling to different countries, and they would go to whichever pavilions they wanted to visit, and they'd get a real vibrant taste of what it would be like to be part of that culture. So I said, okay, this city can do it. Why can't our high school do that? We've got a whole lot of students from different cultural backgrounds in our school. Why don't we have a mini Folklorama? So I initiated this and inspired some people to get on board with me, and we became the organizing team. But it didn't just go that far. My father is of Danish heritage, and my parents have beautiful furniture in their house, and they're living in dining room at teak furniture, beautiful hardwood furniture. And so I said to my mom and dad one day, really naively but really confidently, I said, Mom and Dad, if I got a van, could I empty out our living room and dining room for 2 weeks and take the furniture to the high school as part of the Scandinavian pavilion? And they, trusting me, because we had, you know, been together for over a decade already as parents and child, said, well, as long as you rope it off so it's protected and, you know, people don't sit on it, etc. So I literally emptied out my parents' house of living and dining room furniture for 2 weeks and transported that furniture over to the high school so people could get a sense of a Danish household. So, you know, that just gives an example of where the creative spark comes in me, where I see an opportunity to inspire people, to educate people, to expose people. And then basically I just get on with figuring out how to do it. And that's the sort of foundational story of me and leadership. And there are many, many, many examples that have spawned in my life since that. But that just gives you sort of a taste of where it all began.
That's really awesome. That serious leadership skills there. A question would be, what would you define as the qualities behind that particular move that you just did? Like, you saw this opportunity and you did it. Like, what motivated you to do it? What were the leadership skills or technologies that you would define to execute that one example?
Well, I think it's really an interesting question, and I'm really kind of digging deep to answer it as lean and as simply as I can, Kenneth. I would say one thing is the core in my being is a desire to serve and a desire to create opportunities that inspire people, opportunities that have the potential to lift people out of their current state of mediocrity, suffering, misery, limited self-perception, whatever, and really show them or sort of hold a mirror to people so that they can see they're more than who they think they are. And so the shape or form of leadership initiatives can be so varied, but I would say that's really a premise of it. And then with that as sort of a driving force inside of me, how that translates into action is I keep myself open. I just live with an openness to notice what I would call gaps. You know, I see where people are, I see where I sense they can be, and I see the gap between. And then into that gap awareness comes an idea, let's call it, of how to bridge that gap. And that becomes an initiative. And then I have a natural, I would say, sort of toolkit of leadership attributes, but I've also developed and honed those substantially over the last number of decades. And that couples, that sort of toolkit is coupled with just a really deep faith in myself, as I said earlier, that if I can conceive it, and I'm not the only one this way, it's often been said, if we can see it, we can be it. You know, if we can dream it, we can build it. So if, you know, I just keep myself open to allowing those ideas or insights to plop into my awareness, and then with very little self-doubt, I just get on with making it a reality. You know, years ago, I co-founded with my husband a corporate consulting practice, and the title of it was Vision into Action Consultants. I'd actually developed a nonprofit society earlier called Vision into Action Society, VIA, and that title says everything. Allow yourself to have a vision and then bring it into action. And leadership attributes are really the bridge or the tools by which we bring a vision into action.
Well, I mean, I really got out of what you just said. This was important to me, what motivated you to do that. And it was to serve and to give opportunities for others. Those, to me, are just really beautiful leadership distinctions.
Mm.
Thank you for sharing that. And then to do that, and then, of course, you have the ability, you're natural leader, as you said, you're born leader, to bridge and gap that and figure out how to do that. And in this case, it was physically taking furniture, moving it. You know, in leadership, there's so many different ways that will show up to make the bridge and the gap, which brings me to another question, which is, you know, there's a seminar you're going to be leading very soon, and I'm curious what some of those other tools are that you would define as leadership, and what you would be teaching. And
absolutely, the seminar that you're referring to right now is very particular and really dear to my heart. One of the things that I'm doing in my life currently. So this is sort of a container for the answer I'm about to give to your question, is really looking at, and I see my life as a laboratory. I am an experiment. And so part of my serving humanity and ecology, you know, Gaia, the Earth, and beyond, is to see when something works for me or in me, how is it working? Because when I can ascertain that, I can share that with other people, and I can say, try this, see if this works for you. And that's how I train and mentor other people to become more powerful leaders, is by sharing a lot of what I've gleaned through personal experience or powerful learning from others of how to actually develop our leadership attributes. So this particular course that you're referring to is really dear to my heart. It emanates out of my forthcoming book called The Ego and the Soul, A Map for Humanity's Ultimate Survival. And what I'm recognizing, Kenneth, is that all fear that holds us back from moving forward into our full potential is based in or grows in the petri dish, we might say, of our ego. And I'm not an ego basher. I am very much a reverent, you know, I revere the ego because it's playing a really important function. But I see that it needs an upgrade. And recognizing really simply that as change accelerates, which it is everywhere on the planet for every single human being. I don't think there's anybody on the planet now who's not being touched by the acceleration of change, be it ecological, economic, you know, wars encroaching into new territories, whatever it might be, technology, everybody on this planet is being touched now by the acceleration of change. And what I refer to as our first commission ego, like the first purpose that our ego was given when it was designed, when we as humans were invented as a species, but really specifically, that ego commission was pretty functional. It kept us safe. It kept us functioning in the physical world of space and time pretty well when change was relatively slow. And so I'm talking human history through centuries now. But as we're at this tipping point where change is accelerating, we need to upgrade our ego. And if we don't upgrade our ego, we'll be taken out by fear. And fear is an adversary of everyone, and particularly for leaders. If we can't flip our fear into excitement and engagement, we can't lead. So this course is very much about assisting us to recognize the distinction between what I call our ego and our soul, recognizing the initial commission or initial purpose or function of the ego, and inviting our ego to recognize its own upgrade, inviting it into it, so that ego is no longer afraid of change. Ego actually co-creates with change. And that's the essence of what I'll teach, so to speak, in this upcoming webinar and telecourse.
Well, that's pretty awesome. I am curious of some of your other milestones in life that have really gotten you to where you are right now.
I feel extremely fortunate, Kenneth. I have had an amazing life. I continue to have an amazing life. I am challenged by fear like everyone else. I am championed to grow like everyone else. And perhaps the distinction between me and some of the other people who really, you know, dig in and make the most of this opportunity we call life is that whenever I notice I am in fear, I walk straight into it. So rather than letting it take me out, I walk straight into it. And what I've learned is that fear is disarmed when I face it. So that's a little thing that came to mind in response to your question. But what are some of the milestones? So
Well, I want to know some examples where you walked through that fear. If you could share any.
Okay. Let me share with you a really simple one that I think most listeners can
Great.
Relate to, and then I'll share some of the really powerful, amazing, beautiful ones that I've experienced
Great.
Personally. So the one where I first learned what I just described about when I face fear, I disarm it, was a number of years ago, probably almost 2 decades ago, around about the time I participated in the UN Earth Summit Conference in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. That was 1992. And around about then, I was on the verge of burnout from all the work I was doing as a leader following that Earth Summit Conference, and I needed a bit of a break. So I signed myself up to work at a backcountry hiking lodge in the Rocky Mountains of Canada, and I decided that before I worked there for 2 weeks, which actually was my time out, working at this log lodge where we drew water from the creek in pails, we created wood stoves, we cooked the guest meals on that, we did laundry in a wringer washer, hung it under the mountain sky with clothes pegs on clothes. You know, absolutely exquisite description of work. En route to going into that, I decided I wanted to backpack in, and I would spend 3 or 4 days on my own, carrying all the supplies I needed on my back. And I'd done that before, but I'd never done it alone. And about 4 or 5 days before I was due to head out on this backpacking trip en route to this backcountry lodge where I'd worked for a couple of weeks, I realized for the first time in my life consciously that I was being almost paralyzed. And I realized as I tuned into, okay, what's paralyzing me? I got, oh, this is what fear is. And so I asked myself the question, self-reflective question, what am I afraid of? And I scanned the possibilities. Was it wildlife, you know, being attacked by a bear or whatever? And I went, no, it's not that. And eventually what I came to for me, the truth of my fear, was that I was afraid of being alone in a tent as a woman in the backcountry and some man, you know, intruding my tent at night. And I went, okay, now I know what the fear is. And we all have our own personal fears, right? That was my fear in that instance. So this is the miracle of it, Kenneth. As soon as I was able to identify that's the fear my beautiful ego was in trepidation of, the fear shrunk. Whereas before I did that little exercise of getting clear, what am I afraid of, I was so paralyzed, I was about to cancel my trip. As soon as I was able to identify what the fear was, it shrunk so much, it didn't disappear. It was like about, you know, an inch tall beside me rather than so gargantuan, it almost suffocated me. It was so small that I was able to go ahead and plan the trip and go, and I had a great experience. And the fear was there, but it was so teeny-weeny. It was almost like, just watch out, just be cautious, you know?
Uh-huh.
But it was there, that's all it was. And so that was the first huge learning for me of how it works, almost the mechanics of identifying a fear and walking into it. So the next big milestone, and I'll just share with you maybe one more because it's so huge. I am a professional dancer initially. I trained with a ballet company, one of the three most significant ballet companies in Canada. And then I toured internationally with classically based modern dance companies for a number of years. And then I had this so-called accident in which I broke my knee. And 9 months later, was so physically healed and emotionally strong that I catapulted myself right over the profession of working in companies, and I toured solo, which was virtually unheard of at that time. And I remember, and it was a huge amount of work to prepare for it, but it was very, you know, guided through visions. And I mean, I was just, it was like I was taking dictation about how to heal my body, how to choreograph solos. I saw lighting grids in my mind, you know, where the lights were to be hung in the theater and when the cues would go. It was like I was taking dictation about this thing. It was a magical, magical experience. But I remember being backstage, Kenneth, before the premiere performance, and fear got into me so strongly, it started to eat at my brain. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, but fear often paralyzes the body. I don't know if it's the same for other people, but usually it'll get into my body first, and I'll feel kind of the acidic tightening. But this was so severe, it was getting into my brain. Mm-hmm. And I was almost blanking out. I could almost not think. It was literally like it was like Pac-Man, like eating my consciousness. And I went, I have to get stronger than this, or I'm out. And I had a vision. I saw myself on stage in the opening pose. I wasn't on stage yet. I was still backstage. But I saw myself on stage, and then I saw myself before the lights went off, crawling off stage out of fear. And a voice in me said, you do that, you will lose credibility. You will never be on that stage again. So I knew what the stakes were. And I went on stage, and the victory, I made it through the performance. It was about 45, 50 minutes solo, like me alone on stage, nobody else, nobody to hide behind, no microphone, no guitar, like nothing, just me. And at the end of the performance, people came backstage and they said, wow, Ariel, amazing performance. And they were commending me on the performance. And I said, you know what the real victory is? And they went still and they said, what? I said that I made it through, that fear did not take me.
Of course.
And that was, I believe, I mean, I've had bigger opportunities to face fear. And I could tell you some are pretty amazing to me. They're very symbolic. But there was the first big test in my life, Kenneth. Would I stay on stage, which to me is life. Life is stage, would I stay on stage and say, fear, I'm bigger than you. You cannot take me out. If you're a cautionary signal, I need to heed you. I need to pay attention to you. But if you're trying to take me out, no friggin' way. Move over. I'm coming through.
Uh-huh.
And that literally embodied as a, you know, in the body as a dancer, that was my big turning point. Fear will not take me out.
Wow. Well, that is huge. That is huge. To go through fear is, like you say, that, I mean, because once, it's interesting, once you get through the other side of it, you see how it was actually kind of nothing. It's this false image that's trying to make us be one way or another. And it's just amazing how going through it, you look back and say, well, wow, that was nothing, and you're so much stronger for it.
Yeah, like, I was afraid of that. It's almost like, it's like, you're kidding. I was scared of that. But we only have that approach on the other side when we have become stronger, when we've disarmed it. Yeah. And I believe, Kenneth, that's a principle for everyone. You and I can be talking about this now. We can understand it from personal experience. And I believe it's not just about you. It's not just about me. It's not just about a handful of humans. I believe it's a principle, and it's true for everyone. And there's the leader. It's assisting people in their own version, in their own life, right now or whenever they're ready, to find the smallest fear. It's like back it up to the baby, baby, baby step, a teeny little fear that they can have that victory with. And as they do, their ego is going to go, wow, I can face fear. Wow, I truly can steward this person safely through the gauntlet of life. Wow, I'm pretty good. And that's not an inflated good. It's like, that's a confidence. I can actually do this. And when
the real question is, what do you gear people up? So when they're in that moment, because it's a split second of a moment when someone decides to go through the fear or not, it's like, I would think it's the training before that.
Yeah.
Like when you're on the stage and you decided to go do that and just go through the fear, like there's training behind that that's important.
Definitely.
And that's what I'd like to know. I'm sure you teach that and have your ways.
Definitely. And, you know, I'm finding it fascinating. You know, as we're speaking, a part of my mind is kind of scanning and going, oh, it's interesting kind of the track we're getting onto in this conversation, because it's one of many tracks we could be in this very conversation, that we're going straight for fear, which is
right.
when I get talking with anybody about fear, I go, yes, we can really affect change. If we can talk about our fear, we're actually holding the power in our hands to tip the scales. If we're avoiding the conversation about fear, we're kind of getting close, but we're not really in our power yet. So, yeah, this course and all courses I teach and all the mentoring I do is this course has a curriculum in a sense. Like it's a 6-week program. We're designing it so there are two very clear follow-up weeks where it's purely Q&A, question and answer, to really support participants once they've gone through the course to truly grasp for themselves, to really take ownership of what they've learned and be applying it. And as they're applying it, say, hey, this makes sense, but that doesn't, or I'm stuck here, help me over this. And so it's really ensuring that people, is if we use the illusion of, allusion, of riding a bicycle. It's the course is giving people a bicycle to ride with training wheels, and the follow-up sessions are about taking the training wheels off so they're riding their own bike. And it's really a foundation course that supports people to get to know themselves. You know, all the great sages, Jesus, Buddha, whomever, Muhammad, have all basically said, know thyself. And as we know ourselves, we reclaim the power to affect change and to create our own well-being and create a ripple effect of well-being for people around us. So this course is really a foundation course. We're calling it Be the Wave. It's the foundation course, part one of the book, Ego and the Soul, which is revealing the shift of ego, you know, assisting ego to become empowered in a very constructive way. And the tools people will learn, it's two things. It's a huge opening of understanding, like opening the sphere of the mind to really grasp where we are as humanity, where we are as individuals, where we can go, and how to get from here to there. And then it's coupling that opening of understanding with tools that allow us to actually make those steps. So people come out of it with phenomenal confidence, a lot more bearings in terms of what's going on personally and planetarily, and a real sense of appetite and confidence in themselves that they can contribute substantially to affecting change for the common good.
Wow. So now, are there any dates set for this course? Or
yes, we have dates set, and we're almost at the end of finalizing things. So these dates might move forward in time slightly. So people who are listening to this interview, I highly recommend you check the written dates that we'll announce, because those will be the official dates. But what we're aiming towards right now, Wednesday, August 3rd, an evening, this is North American time zones, Wednesday, August 3rd as a free intro. So an actual class where people can either come in via their computer, so that's the webinar language, or come in via telephone, that's the teleseminar language, and actually have a taste of a free class. And so they'll get an embodied experience of what it would be like to be a registrant in this course. And if they like what they sense, what they experience, then there's a 6-week plus the 2 follow-up weeks. So it essentially it's an 8-week, but we're calling it a 6-week course that people can register for. And there are other courses that grow out of that. This is really a foundational course, but it's a composite in itself. So the start dates we're looking at are August 10th through September 14th. As I say, we might be bumping those forward. We're in the process of finalizing dates now, but that's sort of the ballpark we're aiming for. And the beautiful thing about the way we're offering these courses, as you know, Kenneth, is I love telecourses. I've led them before. They allow people from any geography to connect through technology. So no airline tickets, no booking off dates for holidays to participate in a course. You know, we literally call in through our telephone or come in via our computer, and we can do that from anywhere in the world, home, office, cottage, wherever, car, you know, portable office. And for people who are saying, you know, oh, but I don't live in North America, I live in Europe, or I live in Africa or Asia or wherever, and you know, it's my night when it's their day, we record all the sessions. So I highly recommend anyone who wants a taste of what we're talking about today, Kenneth, register for the free intro and or for the course. And you as participants will access everything we do live via recordings. You'll just be in, you know, the recording's over, so you can't ask questions while we're in it. But you can obviously ask ask questions by email, et cetera, and they'll be incorporated into the next session. So it's as good as being on the live call, and that means virtually anyone in any time zone can participate. And I just love that. It's like we truly are becoming one world.
Technology is amazing. Now, if somebody is on the live call, can they ask questions, or do you say that to the end of the session or
well,
to the end of the 2 weeks? Like,
it's a bit of a mix, and in a sense, it depends on the technology we use. And Kenneth, you and I know that we're actively researching different providers of technologies to see which ones we want to use. I really like the idea of, and I tend to invite a question or two, as I'm going through each class, and then a sort of a synthesis of questions at the end of each class, because it's not about me teaching too, it's about engaging people in their own self-inquiry, their own discovery. But for reason of saying, okay, it's a six-week course, this is what we want to get through, there has to be a degree of let's not just get into questions and, you know, lose the train of the course. So it's really a balance, it's really a mix. And then the reason I like to add those purely question and answer sessions after the course is, as I was alluding to earlier, when people are putting into practice what they're gaining, that's when we discover how much of it do we really understand and what of it is working for us and where are the gaps. And so that follow-up of those couple of weeks of purely question and answer is really for the people who are proactively applying what they're learning so that they can come and say, hey, this isn't working for me, or I'm stuck on this, or I'm not quite sure what you meant there, or am I on the right track here? And that's how people can be sure they take 100% ownership of what they're learning by the time we sign off at the end of the course. I hope what I just said made some sense. It does to me, but I like to check and make sure it's lucid to the people I'm speaking with.
I got it. I like that it's interactive to a point,
mm-hmm.
and then
yes.
far more interactive at the end.
Yes.
Well, this is awesome. And just for registering, what, they go to your site or Leaders, Cars, and Leaders, or what? How would one do this?
Yeah, the way we're streaming it is through leaderscausingleaders.com. So that's www.leaderscausingleaders.com. There also will be links, which is where some people will be accessing this interview, I anticipate, on my blog, which is You Are Light. It's actually www.arielali.com, and there are a lot of vowels in my name, so Google me and you'll likely find me. arielali.com. /U, the letter U, the letter R, the word light, You Are Light. And that's my blog where I have free articles to inspire and motivate people. And I'm really looking forward, Kenneth, to all the people who do feel a resonance with this course and choose to either check out the free intro or jump into participating in the course. It's a very dynamic course, and the learning and the growth and discovery is so powerful in it. And it's really a fun and festive way to meet with other people around the globe who are ready for a similar kind of learning, similar kind of quantum leap. So here we go.
Wow. Well, Ariel, thank you. Thank you for doing the work and for putting this out there for other people to do the work and forming community. I think it's exciting for people who do the work. Like you said, we will be connected throughout the globe. And then someday we might even be able to see each other who's partaking with your work. It's kind of cool.
Absolutely. That neat technology where we can actually see images of each other live on each other's computer screens with access to it. Yeah. You know, the airlines may be suffering for this, but human connection sure isn't. It's really great.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's
been
a real pleasure, Kenneth.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time. Warm
thank
regards
you, thank
to
you.
Everyone who's listening.
Bye for now.